Hey there, welcome to another episode of Talk to Me Sis. Today is going to be such a great and exciting episode. We've been planning for this and we're really excited to have the dads. We've got Mark Smith, the dad of Tanner Smith, and we have Tony Smith, no relation, the stepdad to Connor Tomlinson.
Tony and I, maybe, we might really be related.
You never know.
Maybe somewhere.
I think.
And, but, you know, the moral to the story is just marry a Smith.
The moral to the story, clearly, especially on my end. I think the Nikki and I are really excited. And I think what we were wanting to share, I think, the dad perspective, especially in this situation, because we have a marriage that has ridden the waves. And that's Mark and Nikki. And they were there. Mark and Nikki are solid, and then they're with Tanner from minute one. So really excited to get Mark's lens from that. And then, you know, obviously my marriage didn't survive, and we found a man that chose to get on the ride. So a lens from that direction as well. So I think we're going to start with you and Mark.
Okay. All right. So I basically just made a list of questions that, honestly, I don't know that Mark and I have ever actually sat and asked each other these questions, but before I ask him the first one.
This could be a marriage killer here.
No.
This could not end happily, I can tell you.
Or a therapy session, one or the other.
The ratings will just go higher then.
You know, I'm not usually allowed to have my own opinion sometimes without, you know.
Well, that's what I was actually going to say. Before I ask the first one, I want to publicly say, because I don't know that I have very much, that I really don't know if I've ever truly expressed my gratefulness to Mark for what a partner he has been and the way you provided and the way you stuck in there and the way you never threw in the towel. It is a rare thing. It's an amazing thing. And
thank you.
I'm grateful for you. So, with that being said, this is Mark's perspective, and I think it's important for other autism families to hear how the dad feels, because it's usually so mom-centric. So, first question for you, Mark. Do you remember how you felt on the day Tanner was diagnosed? Like, when we got the piece of paper that said, here's the deal, he's autistic, everything is different than what you thought it was.
You know, I remember it was in the playroom, and it was a Dr. Lutz, L-U-T-Z,
yes,
I think.
It was.
I couldn't remember if it exactly, but psychologist. And I remember she said, oh, he is definitely. And I remember exactly what she said. She said, the best therapy for him, and he's going to have the best therapy for the best outcome. But sadly enough, the best therapy is normally, and you remember, tell me if you remember this, normally, you got to have two working parents. One needs to be a doctor and one needs to be a lawyer, and that's about the only way you can afford what the journey you're going about to take if you want to have it the best. And I went, oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. Well, we are a one income family, and we are not doctors.
We're not doctors.
And so that was. I remember her saying that just before she gave me the $750 bill for her
first hour.
And she said, it's going to be a long ride. And I remember that she wasn't pessimistic, but she said, what you have to do for this kid is going to be one of the most expensive things that you go through. And I thought, oh my God,
I do remember that.
And that stuck with me on the day of diagnosis. And I think everything else was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to make this happen? It wasn't even about a plan. I think Nikki was planning the attack, and I was thinking, how are we going to pay for the plan?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I, you know, early on, that is, I can tell you early on, that is what.
So I for felt. You, it was more the overwhelming fear of like immediate pressure to provide.
Absolutely.
Financial stress. And that was allowed you to maybe not feel the emotional side quite as much?
Wow.
And I can share. I will not share today because this is, but I can share exactly what it cost. Year one, you know?
Yeah.
It was astronomical.
Well,
that was, you know, So yeah.
That leads me very smoothly into my next question, which was, what was your greatest fear at the beginning? So I guess your obvious answer is...
Well, how are we going to do it? I mean, you were headstrong. You were very much like, we're going to do the best. We're going to do everything. You were contacting everybody. And I was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to everybody? We had a payroll. We had a... This was not a business, but we had a payroll.
We did.
Every week, we had a payroll, and it was just weird. But anyway.
It was.
But
you had Taylor, then there was Tanner, and weren't you pregnant?
At the time of diagnosis, Midge was about one.
Oh, my. Like, so you had three kids.
We had three, yeah. And she came along when things were starting to, like, I was starting to look at him and go, why is he doing that? Like thinking, oh my, that seems a little off. Or why is he not doing this? You know, like, why is this not happening? And then by the time of actual diagnosis, she was a toddler.
So Mark, three kids, single income, and you get punched in the stomach with, oh, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow. For sure.
And you know what, Lise, I, in the back of my mind, I thought, you know what, he's going to outgrow this.
Mm-hmm.
I said, he's just a little boy now, and I know he's doing some weird things, but he just might outgrow this. And that was really what I was going through at that point in the early days. That was very much what I was thinking.
That's self-preservation, right?
Yeah. And that's something for, like, younger parents to hear, because at the same point for me, I was drowning in the emotion and the grief and the loss. And it was all I could do just to care for the three, start researching, start learning terminology, start up a therapy program. And I literally just sort of looked at him like, you gotta make it happen. You gotta provide it. I'll execute. You gotta do it. And as a young married couple, if someone is out there facing this phase, it's rough. It's rough. And it talk about a division. I mean, it puts a wall between you I'm going to be honest. It wasn't good. It's not good for the marriage. It's not easy. It is something where you feel like you're each running a separate race, at least the way we did it. And so I say that, not that I have a perfect answer as how a younger couple should do it, but don't feel like you're abnormal or that you're doing something wrong because you feel that way. Because you do. And I don't really know what would have been the perfect, better way. I don't know what would have been the better way.
I'll tell you what would have been great for any dad, any husband. I just finished a book yesterday, The Warrior Poet Society by John Lovell. And he's teaching dads and boys how to be warriors and poets. I devoured it in 1 week. Best book I've read in a long time. But when we're talking about early diagnosis, I was a warrior, but I had no poet side to me at all. I didn't understand, you know, I didn't understand why all this stuff cost so much and why I'm older now. I didn't cry back then. I cry now. So, you know, that was just I was a different person 20 years ago than I am now. So that is, you know, and it's hard for a young married man who's thinking, I gotta put the spurs on the horse and go, to all of a sudden, you know, get this hit. I mean, it's hard for mom too, but but for a young dad, I could certainly take it better now. You know, I mean, and honestly, if Maverick would have been the one that got the diagnosis, it would have been much easier.
Because we were older.
Right.
Yes.
It was so early. It was too early for me to have a child with disabilities and have this much pressure on me. I can tell you that. And I did not handle it as well as I should have.
You did a really good job, though.
So what's that, just when you guys were going through that, because clearly my marriage didn't survive it. Connor's dad and I didn't get through it. You were very frank and transparent, and I think this is amazing for young couples right now who hopefully will listen to this. I think this episode is so important.
I do, too.
Mark, like, how did you guys take care of your marriage? How did you? Did you guys set a date night? What did you do?
You know what? But you know what? It was not as easy as it was.
No, we definitely took some hits.
Oh, we took some hits.
We took some hits that I would say sheer stubbornness kept us together. We're both really, really stubborn.
Yeah.
And I feel like
we are teammates. We've always been teammates.
We're a great business.
When we can't stand each other for 24 hours, we're still good teammates. I mean, we do.
Love it.
We know we have a job to do.
Yeah.
So
we do. We're good at that. But it isn't to say that I think both of us, and I mean, I know I felt this way, and I'm sure because I know I did not give him what he needed from the wife perspective for a long time because I gave everything. Honestly, not just to the kids, but mostly to Tanner. I think we both definitely felt emotionally not cared for and depleted for a lot of years. But I think we were so devoted to our children and loved our kids so much and loved what we had built so much. And our fringe, like our extended family support and friendship support was super, super strong. Would you agree? And I think that held us. And we both come from really long, really strong marriages. And I think like the option of it not just didn't even really, I don't know. It honestly, I don't know that it ever really occurred. Did it occur to you?
No, it did not ever occur. But I will tell you this, though. This is real. You know, I saw Nikki hurting. I saw Nikki crying. I saw Nikki devastated. Even though doing a lot of, you know, 24/6 and a half, she was putting on this, I'm great. But I knew, and it's weird, no matter what I did, I could not make her happy.
Right.
In other words, she wanted her little boy to be fixed. And no matter what I did or what I said, either way, warrior or not, it didn't hit. I could not make her, I couldn't fix her. And it was weird because I was kind of like, well,
he's a fixer.
I don't need to fix myself. You know, but I need to fix her. And I couldn't fix her. I couldn't make her happy. And that was strange for me within our marriage. That's probably the roughest part for me was, you know, I am a suck it up buttercup guy and always have been.
Tony laugh.
Tony, listen, he's that man's from Somerton. Dude.
He's from Somerton.
Manning, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I'm a suck it up buttercup. Listen, get over it. And we got work to do. And it was hard for me. So that was very difficult for me.
And you know, but within that, and this is sort of going off on a track, but that takes us around to the acceptance piece where I was failing because I was drowning in my own grief, even though like Mark said, on the surface, I'm going to therapy, I'm doing the right things, I'm being an energetic mom. But in my heart, I was angry and devastated and frustrated and frankly pissed off that this had happened to us. And I felt like it was so unfair. And what I should have been working on was accepting the fact that it doesn't matter the why, it doesn't matter the how, it matters the what are we going to do now? How are we going to work this for good? How are we going to celebrate Tanner for who and what he is? And also like understanding as a wife, that it was not Mark's job to fix it. It was Mark's job to be a good teammate. And he was being an excellent teammate. He was being a 15 out of 10 teammate. But I wasn't effectively communicating to him how much I realized that I did, but I wasn't letting him know it. And I wasn't loving him apart from our parenting. You know what I mean? Like, I was just swallowed in the parenting and sort of like, just help me. And I kind of really did want him to fix it because I just wanted somebody to make this go away, honestly, and make it better because it was hard and it sucked.
And guys, I'm going to tell you now, just from my perspective, Nick, this is how Nick and I are very different. I am skeptical of, you know, new treatments, you know, everybody's got a treatment, you know, everybody is kind of like the television evangelist. Oh, you know, but, you know, God bless you all, but most of all, send your money. And that's kind of how I felt, you know, that's kind of how I felt early on. Everybody had a treatment. We could shine lights in their eyes in Chicago. We could take a pill. We could kill the bacteria in the gut, cleanse the gut with vancomycin. We did all this stuff. And at the end of the day, everybody just wanted some outrageous amount of money.
Yeah.
And honestly, I am a science-minded person. And I said, there aren't that many you know, what I really felt like was the ABA, where somebody was in his face.
Yeah.
That's what it took. That's what I was very optimistic about, is we need to be paying for that.
Yeah.
Not all this other possibility. However, at the time, Nikki wanted to try everything.
I did.
I get it. Yeah.
And listen, and I understand it too, but I was skeptical. So when your husband, when her partner is skeptical, you know, I mean, I can remember we went to Chicago, and I remember me saying, honey, you're going to go to Chicago and spend how many thousands to shine a laser in his eyes for 3 days? And you think that's going to cure autism? No. And I said, go ahead, go for it. But that is not going
to. But that has to cause friction, you know? I mean, it really has to cause friction.
It did.
It did cause friction.
But I will say, because he loved me.
I adore you.
Thank you.
Oh.
He did. He provided it. He let me check that box because I couldn't sleep at night if I didn't feel like, I felt like if I don't alleviate my fear that I've overlooked something, I'm not going to live through this. And I think he did see that in me, and he honored it, and he busted his ass to make it happen. And he worked really hard. But all right, so we've been talking a lot. Let's shift it over to the other Smiths, and let Tony have the floor for a minute.
So, I'm just enjoying this one.
I mean, you guys are, it's so nice for me to see too, because I, you know, everything you talked about early on is absolutely stuff that I went through with Simon, which is Connor's dad.
Yep.
And, you know, we had the extra layer of having twins quite quickly after Connor. So there was just a lot of swirling the bowl. And it's just everything you went through. And it's just, it's amazing. The teammate stubbornness, we got each other's back, even though we don't like each other today, attitude that didn't work out for me and Simon. But so then I was alone from 2007. Simon decided to just, you know, leave the family and move on.
Yeah.
He never left the kids, was there, saw them every other weekend and helped financially support. So I don't want to badmouth him in any way. He, the day-to-day grind, he left the team.
Right.
He couldn't do it. So, 5 years I was alone, raising 4 children and, had to quickly find myself back into the workforce. And I was just out there and obviously didn't want to give up on love and marriage. I thought I could be a good wife to somebody. I wanted that for myself, but I realized I had a lot going on under my circus tent. You know, I had 4 kids. I had a special needs son, and I was just very upfront when I was dating. And so long story short, over to Tony, I meet Tony, and I was very upfront. Was I not?
Mm-hmm.
When I met. So, the first thing I want to ask you is, we met and I was straight about who was in my life. And I wanted to ask you, what did you know about autism? Tony has 2 children, neurotypical, by the way.
That's
what did you know about autism before we met? And did you know anybody or have any experience with anybody with autism before you met me?
You know, no, I had no exposure to autism other than Rain Man, which, you know, was, wasn't very informative of exactly what, you know, those children and adults on the spectrum endured or why, you know, what the diagnoses were or any of those things. So I had no exposure. Connor was my first, personal exposure to anyone on the spectrum.
Okay. And then when you learned that I had a son with autism, did it have any impact on you to want to pursue a relationship with me? Did you research it? Were you like, I'm not sure?
Honestly, you know, it was, I was focused on you, and I knew that, you know, you included your children. What I learned about autism, I predominantly learned from you and asking questions or you being upfront about, you know, why Connor may see a certain situation a certain way and why he may respond to that situation in that way. But mostly I got my education from you and watching you with Connor. And I didn't know this at the time, but, you know, your network included so many parents with children on the spectrum. So I went from, you know, no exposure to all of a sudden, like,
yeah,
everything that we did socially typically included two or three other families with children on the spectrum. So I quickly got indoctrinated to,
yeah,
you know, just what it meant, and just and the term autistic or Asperger's meant different things to different families.
Yeah.
You know, different families endure, you know, different effects of it, and they all handle it very differently. So yeah, that was, you know, it was an eye-opening educational experience for me.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you, were you concerned, because with your two children, obviously we're blending two families, were you concerned in any way about your two children and getting your kids involved and exposed in a family where this was going to be a dynamic and a layer?
No, I wasn't. I, you know, my children, and we've, you know, we've been blessed. We've been able to leave very small town, if you even call it a town. It's more of a community where we live. You know, and all you do there is you farm, you hunt, you fish, and, you know,
Lord.
Drink beer and play sports, Lord, you know, and not necessarily in that order, you know. Church, sports, and farm. So, you know, but we, you know, at a young age, we moved away, and we moved around a lot, including internationally. And so they've been exposed to so much, and have had to be, welcoming and you know, they see other languages, other cultures. And we've been in that situation ourselves, and we've lived in a country where we were the outsiders. We were the minority.
Yeah.
So they've been very accepting of others. And, you know, our household in their teenage years, you know, was a melting pot of everything. So that they've always kind of had that acceptance initially of anyone. So the conversation that I had with my child, I was not worried at all about Connor and the fact that Connor was on the spectrum. The conversation I had with my children was, hey, you know, I've met someone, she has four kids, and there was no conversation whatsoever with, hey, what are those kids like? What do those kids do? What are their hobbies? You know, do they get along with it? None of those conversations took place. It was more of, hey, I've just met someone that has four kids, and we're naturally progressing to moving in together, and it's going probably pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say pretty quickly
by
anybody's standard, including our own.
Yes.
So it was always
it's a Smith that, man, they're was, irresistible.
It was That's always right. that conversation about sharing dad's attention, and not in nothing about, you know, the children and anything about the children, per se.
And then just, you know, just to keep right here for a minute, I just want to know, when you first met Connor, he would have been about 13 years old. Connor's about to be 26, so he would have been 13. What was your first impression, and was there anything that stuck out to you when you met him?
I found him so unique. And, you know, I found him really funny. And
yeah,
my first impression was, it was either amazement or just fascination with your relationship with him.
Agreed, was more, Tony. Yes.
More so than anything, because I saw the way that you treated Connor, and it was almost like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say take no shit, but you always held Connor in line, right? In check. Like, hey, Connor, this is unexpected behavior. Realize that, you know, you can do this at the house, you can do this in the cul-de-sac, but we're in the grocery store, you know, people will see this differently, and you need to be aware of that. And in those early days, the sarcasm, and you and I are very sarcastic people. And, you know, I saw Connor go from getting upset when people were being sarcastic with him to realizing, hey, you're being sarcastic with me. To this day, he's pretty fluent in sarcasm himself. So I've seen the evolution of that. So I was fascinated with the way you handled Connor and versus, you know, every kid you handle differently in some ways. But I was just always fascinated with that.
That's amazing. I agree. It is an incredible mother-son relationship to watch.
It really is.
It really is.
Thank you.
Tony, you know what? We did the same thing with the sarcasm. The joke, there's no gray area with Tanner.
Yeah.
You know, we joke about things all the time. I mean, we are foul-mouthed.
We are.
and we joke about everything, you know, and he would get so insulted when I would call his mom something that I really didn't mean, but we just had, he would get, now he says, oh, Dad, you're really just joking, aren't you? Yeah. Ha, ha. So, you know, that is where we have progressed. When he was 13 years old, he was just like Connor.
No, you couldn't
He didn't understand the sarcasm. He didn't understand the joking. Now he does. And so, you know, you and I are very much, we are very fortunate because both of the boys, and I don't want to say this because they are very likable.
They are.
They're very likable boys.
Yeah.
You know?
They are.
They're both warm. They both show affection.
They're very likable.
That's a blessing.
It's a tremendous blessing. My mindset was, you know, and I have background with autistic individuals before I ever had kids, but my mindset was when I got told that this was going to be my life, I got to treat Connor in some way, shape, and form the way the world's going to treat him, because I knew the world wasn't going to give him grace. Yeah. And I was going to scaffold it, and I was going to be hard on him when it hurts as a mom. And for 5 years, I had no dad there. So I had to do both. I had to kick his ass, you know, and gosh, that's probably going to really upset some people to hear it, but I had to wear both hats.
No, if it upsets people, they'll just have to be upset because we did the same
thing.
That
is one of the things I have written down here that is the fact that, you know what? I didn't give Tanner the grace that maybe he deserved. I wanted him to be, you know what?
Strong.
You can't talk back to your mom just because you're on the spectrum. You can't do that. That's not allowed. And the other three kids don't do it. You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it was hard.
I would say hold the behavior expectation.
Yes, we did.
As high as what we knew he could conceptualize. If we knew he could understand it, that's where it was. And I don't care how you're feeling, you know, because that's the way I handled my other children. And I know some people won't like that, but that's how we parent.
But look at the boys now. I mean, it's the point. I mean, if we could zoom out and look at where Tanner and Connor and, you know, granted, they were both given these golden tickets and they have this exposure through this wonderful show. But they were selected because they are just dynamic individuals on the spectrum.
They're very approachable.
And they handle themselves very well. And they can handle change. They can handle some stress. They can be flexible, which they proved, you know, through the show, because that's not an easy thing to execute. So, for sure.
I wouldn't want to go on my first date with a camera in my face.
No. No.
No way. No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. All right. Well, I have another question for Mark.
Yeah.
This is something I've never really asked you, but I'm totally just curious. When we found out that Maverick was a boy, because we did not plan to have Maverick, it's Taylor, Tanner, Madeline, and after Tanner's diagnosis, we said, that's it, we're done. But a trip away in Charleston will change things for you. And you can get pregnant on day 7, if anybody's wondering. You can get pregnant on day 7, because Maverick is a day 7 baby. But did you ever worry, or did you have like fears that you didn't talk about that he would be autistic too when we found out he was a boy?
No.
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 Okay.
No.
I was just curious. I did a lot. Yeah.
I did not. I never did. You know, honestly, and part of that goes back to, I don't know where autism came. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nikki has her belief. You guys have a belief. I don't know whether you're born with it. I don't know whether it comes from a vaccine or something. Mm-hmm. I don't really know the answer to that. And I've never really
pondered it
because there, you know, 100 people have 50 different answers or opinions. And I don't really know. I don't really know. It doesn't, that's the kind of thing I don't really need to know. You know what?
It
is here. It's here. We are here. And,
now we just deal with it.
We just deal with
it.
Yeah. You know, no, but I never
Well, that was one of my questions. So he just answered another question.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Well, I've got something that Tony is very humble and would never, he would never ever bring this up. And I bring it up quite a bit because it blew me away, actually. Connor was bullied pretty badly in middle school. It was getting bad. Connor was falling into a depression, not wanting to go to school. We were just dating. We were not married. We weren't even engaged. And this man stepped up. I was a single mom doing the best I could, making ends meet financially. We weren't blended in any way, shape, or form financially. And Tony stepped up and paid for a private school for Connor. Wow. And I know you would never tell anybody that, but I waved that flag. That's huge. What kind of... You know, when you got to that space, you had your own two children. They were still in high school. That you had a lot going on with them. You had an ex-wife that you were still helping and taking care of. You had a lot of things that you were doing. You had a mother that you were helping support. And here's this chick with this kid. And what was behind that? And what were you feeling that was so generous?
Do you remember, I mean, we were a week or two, so your grandma had died, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you visited her,
mm-hmm.
or you went to the funeral and you got back home, and while you were gone, we created a name, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
And what did I say?
It goes to almost what they said. So Tony, my last name was Tomlinson, like Connor.
Right.
He was Smith. And Tony said to me, we were newly dating, but he said, we need a team name. And he came up with Smithinson, which is my Instagram account.
It is.
He said, if we get a team name, teams never break up.
Yeah.
Aww.
So,
love that.
So I always, so my feelings for you, I signed up to take care of you. And your kids were part of that package. And when I see things that really bother you, or I mean, it was not even a thought, right? It was me taking care of you.
I love that.
But we weren't even engaged. I mean,
I know, but it was just like your grandma's funeral. I mean, it wasn't even a debate for me, because
that's character.
I wanted to make sure that you were okay, and I saw how much that, I mean, you weren't sleeping at night. Connor obviously wasn't doing good. And I'm not going to sit there and watch that, you know? And
I just wanted to kind of talk about that just because I want people to see that. I guess I want you moms or dads who are in a divorced situation with this, that for the lens from here, that where I was, that there are good people out there. I mean, you know, if you do still believe in marriage or you want that partner, that those people exist. They're there.
They're called Smiths.
They're all Smiths.
But my point is I'm trying to give hope to the broken family, to the single mom or the single dad, if that, you know, it didn't last because the special needs strain was so bad, that there is potentially somebody out there who will see the beauty in you and your family and your child and love you and promise. And I guess that's why I felt like I wanted to bring that up, is just these people, these unicorns are there.
Exactly. And it's that's hope. I mean, that is hope for single moms out there. Single dads. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I love that. That is
great. I
want to
know more from Mark. What else you got for Mark?
Okay. All right. Okay, Mark, do you feel like, or in what ways do you feel like having a special needs child impacted how you parented the other three? Like, how did it change you as a dad? Like, do you feel like you were more attentive to certain things or less attentive? Or do you feel like you appreciated certain things more?
No, I think that they just, you know, I really think that it's weird. Because our other three kind of helped parent Tanner.
They did.
And so I saw them differently. I didn't parent them really. I mean, I guess I did parent them differently. They were, you know, they were.
Because they're typical.
They were typical. But You know, it was like they had joined the team.
Yeah.
Even little Maverick. I mean, they all joined the team, and it's what we expected of them. And so,
yeah, it was sort of unspoken.
It was an unspoken.
This is what we have, and we're all in this together.
And they all three took up for him, and they all drew a sword and said, "You know what? We're not going to let anybody." So it was really very, very, you know.
We were blessed with the other three that we got. And I see it in your family.
Yep.
The amount of time that I've spent, like, we are both families. So lucky. And I've only met Hunter, but it looks like the step siblings, it's the same thing.
Hunter's
unbelievably yeah. blessed with the sibling situation. Because we haven't really had those struggles. A lot of people ask me, you know, like, how did your other kids do? Are they resentful? Did they give you a hard time? Did they rebel because of it? I'm like, no, actually, they have been my lifeline in a lot of ways. They brought me so much joy. They have been his biggest fans. And I feel like they sort of almost like went out of their way to not be a problem because they knew we were
absolutely
really, really concerned with their brother.
This is real. This is real. The other three kids knew exactly how much Tanner cost. No, really. No, they knew. They knew how much his school cost, you know?
Yeah. Because he went to a different place.
They knew how much it, you know, how much it cost to educate him and how much it cost to
therapy
and stuff. They knew that. They knew that. And they knew that, you know, when Dad said, dude, God, it's four of you, dude.
Yeah.
I don't care what so-and-so, that's a single, you know, that's a,
they're understood.
Only child. You got, there are four of you, but they understood a lot of it was Tanner.
And they understood sacrifice at a very early age, and to be unselfish, like very, very early on, because they just knew that. And we always explained it like, you know, he does get an unequal amount of attention, but he's also not going to get an equal amount of opportunity in life just because of his circumstance. And you guys are going to get to experience and do and have freedoms that he will never have. And for that reason, yeah, this is just the way life is. It isn't fair. We're two people. There's four of you. And he requires more than y'all do.
And that's just being on the team, right?
Yeah, it is.
How cool are Tanner and Connor breaking these barriers now that we put on ourselves for our boys?
You know what? And I don't apologize for that.
No.
They have done great. You know, I can remember when Tanner was playing coach's pitch baseball. And this stuck out in my mind because I was helping coach the team. But Bill Spires, who played Major League Baseball he's from our town, he was pitching. And he was so good that when Tanner would swing the bat, Bill could hit the bat with the ball. And everybody cheered for him. And he ran to first base because Mr. Bill would say, run to first
base. Go, go, go.
And, you know, I remember thinking at that time, you know what? This is so cool. Everybody's cheering for him. But you know what? I have never been a participation trophy dad. And I think I remember at that point thinking, you know what? This is kind of what I am. This is what Tanner, everybody's going to cheer for him. Everybody, you know, feels sorry for him. And everybody wants him to succeed. But, you know, the coach has got to, they all knew that the coach was actually, he was swinging and the coach was good enough to hit the bat with the ball. And I always remember that. I mean, I just remember this is what we are going to be.
Yeah.
You know.
It redefines everything.
You know.
But it also shows what a great community. How much.
Yes.
It was great. You know. But that is why the show now, I'm just like, dude, you know what? You freaking kill it.
Yeah.
Kill that dude. You know what?
He's breaking barriers. Yeah. Limiting beliefs. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I have a question for you. In the 12 and a half years you've been in our life, and Connor will be 26.
Has it been that long?
It's been 12 and a half.
Mm.
Yeah. is there ever a point with Connor that you felt a feeling of overwhelmed or just at a loss at how to do anything or anything pertaining to Connor? Like, oh my gosh, this is way too heavy. I don't know what to do. Is there ever been a moment where you were like alone with him where you're like, he's freaking out, anything?
No. I'm trying to think. I mean, in the early years, I think our relationship was a little bit awkward because, you know,
What did he used to say he didn't want you to do?
Don't go to tier 15.
We never knew. We knew. We didn't understand.
I think in his mind it was something to do sexually between
Tony, he kept saying, don't go to tier 15 with my mother.
But it took him a while to, it took him years to really accept me and my role.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that. You know, I never, you know, I just let people, you know, come at their own pace. And, and I'm okay with that. And, but Connor and I developed, I remember the drives to the private school that we were talking about. And I took him to school every morning for whatever reason. I don't remember our circumstances at the time, but I would take him to school and somebody, I think your mom would pick him up.
Babysitter.
And, I think, you know, that was still early on, and the conversations we would have were just, oh my, you know.
Tony would call me and say.
I've always been, you know, I if it's about farming, sports, hunting, fishing, I'm your guy. If it's about dinosaurs and sci-fi and dragons, you know, don't ask me a thing about it.
One day you called me and he goes, did you know that dragon eggs explode underwater? Yeah. That's all I have.
So, I think Connor and I started developing our own relationship. And, you know, we have that today, you know.
You do.
You know, and it's, so yeah. But there's never been a moment where I felt like overwhelmed or, holy shit, what do I do with this? I just, because I've seen you with him too. And there have been moments where he's lost it with me. Or not on me, but around me. And, you know, maybe it's about a sibling, you know, and how siblings can get sometimes. And so I've just seen how you handle him, and I've drawn from that. But I never felt overwhelmed or at a point where I didn't know how to handle the situation.
I love that.
I don't know that I shared with you. I shared it with you, Nikki.
Yes.
I found the paper that I wrote before, when we got engaged. Connor was having a really hard time with it.
Masterful parenting, can I say? It was masterful parenting on Lisa's part.
I wrote down Connor's fears, and then I wrote down the reality check. And one of the fears was that he wasn't going to have a dad anymore, and then that my last name was going to change, that he wasn't going to be the man of the house, that you were. He obviously took this role on of him being the man of the house. And anyway, so I do remember, and we always laughed because we didn't know what the hell. Well, we knew what he meant tier 15 was, but where he got that from.
That's so funny.
But he just kept saying, just don't go to tier 15.
Tier 15.
And then, of course, sarcastic me, I'm like, so tier 14's okay, though.
Yeah. You can go all the way to 14 and a half, but don't hit 15.
This poor child.
You know, I'm listening to Tony, and I'm thinking that it's, you know, it's not really that much difference between
stepdad and dad.
Listen,
yeah.
Both of us, I'm hearing him say he's supporting you and watching you. I was the same way. It was
it wasn't
a whole lot of difference. Nikki was doing a lot of that same thing you were doing, Lise, and I was just basically having her back. Mm-hmm. You know, she was taking the lead. So it was very, very, very much the same. I mean, you know.
Very similar.
Very similar. So it's not like, Tony, you know, because there were a lot of days that I was like, okay, you know, you can't talk to your mom like that, but he's doing it, you know.
Even this, I know he's wanting to go to the gym. He loves to go. I mean, even taking us, we're on a Sunday morning. You are both sitting next to Nikki and I because Nikki and I want to jump off this cliff and do this podcast. And look at the two of you. You're just sitting here backing up your girls. And we appreciate it.
Well, we got an hour, right?
There will be something. Nikki, we will have
45 minutes, Nikki.
There will be something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're definitely getting points for
this. Definitely going to get, my points are, you know.
Hey, will there be tier 15? You never know.
You never know.
Now, at our age, it's...
Okay, this isn't that podcast.
Anyone else? Nikki, is there anything else? I love hearing Mark's lens.
Yes. Okay.
Let me...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to say something just because I just want to... You know, when we're talking about how I feel, you know, one of my biggest fears, even right now today, is... who the hell's going to take care of Tanner when mm-hmm. Nikki and I are not here?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I love all the independence he has. I love the fact that he can order his own groceries. I love all of that. But
somebody oversees
somebody it. Has to oversee be in charge yeah. of that. And, you know, if Nikki and I went on a week's vacation by ourselves, somebody's got to watch Tanner. Somebody's got to at least know that Tanner's in the world and needs, you know.
Yeah, just check on
him.
And
so one of my biggest fears right now, at 57 years old, is when I'm gone, it's not enough to just leave a trust fund for. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about who is going to take care of
that responsibility.
Who's going to take care of Tanner? Who is going to make sure that Tanner, can do life? You know what I'm saying? And that's really what that's one of my biggest fears right now who's going to take care of him?
That was actually my next question. And he said it before, because that really was what I was going to ask next.
I mean, I can tell you that that's Lisa's greatest fear too. And greatest you know, we talk about the show and breaking boundaries and really giving people on the spectrum a voice and also an understanding from the masses, which I think the show is just so well done. It's just an incredible blessing. But I can tell you, before the show, before we understood what this show could give a platform for, Lise would be awake, keeping herself awake at night and saying, I just don't know what I'm going to do with Connor. I just don't know about Connor's future. And she was, you know, this would happen often enough. Like, you know, once every week or so, she would get into that mindset. And I remember, you know, I'm always trying to make it okay, right? And, you know, having, you know, you guys talk about the team and, you know, the family, Connor's family is the same way. His family is right there for him. And I would always tell Lee, she would always like, he has no friends. And I'm like, you know what? You know, honey, he is the happiest person that I know by right. far and away. He is the happiest human being that I know today. And, you know, she was so worried about him, but he's so happy. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but Mark, you know, you share that. And I think that's exactly Lisa's concern as well, is who's going to take care of Connor when I'm not here.
And it's a tremendous thing to think about, you know, asking one of the siblings, which is honestly probably what will happen. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean,
but that's a big thing to ask.
Yeah, but it is something you have to ask, you know, and that you can't assume and you can't be hurt if they don't want to.
My bet is you won't even have to ask.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably going to be a condition. That's going to be a condition when they find a significant other. One of those conditions is going to be, oh, and by the way, he's with me. You know, I don't think you're going to have to ask that. I think that's going to be that's going to be the norm and the standard in the family.
Well, they've just added a son-in-law to their...
I've already had the conversation with him. I said, buddy, you just took on a lot.
Yeah.
And I expect this of you. I've already... Yeah. We have had that conversation over bourbon in front of a grill.
Hey, that makes it it's sacred when you have a bourbon. Yeah.
That's right. Listen, it's much better with a bourbon.
I have told him, listen, all this that I've built is going to be yours someday. You're going to control it. But you, along with that is going to come Tanner.
Yep. Yeah.
And I expect you to step up to the plate. And he said, I got it. Just like that. He said, I got it. Yep. So, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tanner's an amazing woman, so she would pick a great guy.
She did. But it is. That is something, too, that I feel like the siblings need to be just commended for and appreciated, and the fact that they love their special sib and that they are willing to give up, you know, the natural separation that siblings usually have as adults and continue that caretaker relationship is incredible. It's incredible. It really is. But yeah, and it is something that is just the reality for special needs families, something other people never think about.
It really is. And one last question that I think just would put a good bow on this episode. So you've been co-parenting with me for 12 and a half years, and you have obviously been there. He's heard the tears on the pillowcases. He's ridden the highs and the lows. If you could take a snapshot, and maybe it's the last year, because I know it is for me, but what is your proudest moment of with Connor today?
Oh shit.
I think I know because we were both bawling.
I'm already tearing up thinking about it. Having known Connor for whatever 12 years, and just seeing how he's grown and then seeing what this show has really forced him to be, engagement with people that he doesn't know, with strangers and having to talk and present himself. But the moment that he got on that stage in New York City on Broadway, and people don't know that an hour before this, during the intermission, I walked up to him back in the back by the concession stand, and he was losing it, man. He's like, I'm leaving right now. Why am I doing this? I mean, he was losing it. And I talked to him for a minute. I'm like, you're going to be great. And I realized I wasn't really getting through, so I went back and told Lisa, I'm like, you need to go up and talk to him. Because I know my limits with Connor, and I wasn't getting through to him this time. But he sucked it up, and he got up on that stage in front of a thousand. There were probably 2,000 people in this auditorium, and it's Broadway, so these people are, like, right on top of you. And he got up on that stage, and he freaking owned it. Absolutely owned it, and we were all freaking
booing.
We were bawling in the seats. Ugly crying.
I was busting. I had so much pride.
Watching it when you posted it.
We were just hugging each other and crying.
I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was a moving moment.
Yeah.
And it was the culmination. It was the culmination of everything that he had been through and who he had become, all in, a 2-minute thing of him up on that stage. And it was moving.
It is. Absolutely. It is surreal. Yep. It is surreal to watch things. What was your most proud moment, would you say?
You remember that picture that I have of him and when he finished his first cross-country race? My favorite picture. And I remember when he finished that race, Julian, young man, had to run with him because he would get lost. He didn't know, but Julian would push him. And I remember when he crossed that finish line, I mean, he was slobbering and he
sweating.
Was red. And he didn't really understand why he needed to be doing that. But he knew everybody was cheering for him. But I can remember, I'm starting to think about it. But I remember looking at him, and he had this look in his eye like, oh my, he wasn't like, oh dad, guess what? I just finished. It was like, dad, I'm finished. And
are you proud of me?
Are you proud of me? But he was like, I don't know why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it because y'all want me to do it.
And I want you to be
proud. It doesn't make any sense that I should be sweating my ass off running 3.5 miles, but I'm doing it. And, but I did it and I finished and I finished like everybody else finished. And I remember that look in his face.
Yeah. I think the cross country was so pivotal for us because I think it's when we really realized how strong he is. Not just physical endurance, mentally. And like that he is a resilient, like he has been through some crap and he keeps coming back. And yeah. I think that's why cross country was so pivotal for us.
And if he knows his mom and dad and everybody's cheering for him, he'll literally do anything.
That's a huge growth when he's looking into your eyes for that check-in mark dad, are you proud of me, dad? That is huge for somebody on the spectrum.
Yep.
It is. It's huge. That he cares. Yeah.
Oh, that picture, Lise, I grabbed his face. Taylor got it. It perfect. I had no idea. But I
Where
was looking
is it?
At
it. I want to see it.
I'll send it to you.
It's the most amazing. It's my favorite picture. I still have it. And until just a year ago, I had it as my whatever you call it.
My favorite
picture. But anyway. Well, let me say this and wrap. I don't know if are we wrapping it up or are
yeah,
we
I think we're wrapping it up. I feel like it's good.
One of the things that I heard Tony talk about that I feel is very important. Whether he came on board, in the middle, or whether you're a new dad in the beginning, moms are fragile, wives are fragile. Now, I'm not saying you guys are tough as nails. I'm definitely not calling you. You're tough.
I'm not offended.
But even though you have that tough, I got to kill this. I got to take this. There is a fragile side, mm-hmm. And I think Tony and I are very much alike in this way. you know, it's not easy sometimes to take care of that fragile side. And I think, you know, I think dads and husbands and whatever need to realize that there is a fragile side that they need to take care of with mom and with wife. You know what I'm saying? You just can't fix everything. You got to just realize that there are some things.
Give the grace.
You got to just shut up and listen to it and go with it. And, you know, and I just think that's one very important thing. Because listen, this will freak young dads out, especially, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And you gotta hang in there and just realize, and you know, I'm speaking because, you know, I realized this later on that, you know, you need to do this early on. You need to realize that, you know,
yeah.
Your wife is fragile, even though she's taking it head on and, you know, forging ahead.
Yep.
Inside, there's a part that, you know,
things are breaking.
Needs to be nurtured.
Well said.
Do you have anything you want to say to any of the dads out there, stepdads, new dads, anything jumping into this pool?
Wow, I wasn't ready for that. you know, it's just, you know, now that, and Mark mentioned this earlier as a, you know, as a dad, how he matured and grew, and, you know, had it happen now, he would be okay with it. And I think that's a stronger message. That's a bigger message, really, is that no matter what's happening, it will be okay. And you will get through it. And in 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, the world can be very different. I mean, holy shit.
Yeah.
For 3 years ago, if you told us, hey, this is where we're going to be as a family.
Right.
You know, 10 years ago, I mean, we were in the throes of it 12 years ago, man. We had kids in high school, kids in middle school, kids, you know, we were going 18 different directions with sports and
six kids.
Music and choir. And I was traveling and it was crazy. And now it's like, hey, what are we going to do today? You know, I mean, you know, the world, it changes. Right. And you just got to know when you wake up every morning, own that day, yeah. Make this you know, day better, own. Make this you day better. You and you will get through.
And just say, you know what? You're exactly right. I agree with you 100%. You just got to own it and, you know.
Yeah.
And I think for the younger parents, too, it's something to be so proud of at this phase, no matter whether whether it's a step parent or a biological parent all the way through a situation, to have come this far is an incredible, incredible accomplishment. And that's so bonding. And there's so much satisfaction in that. It is worth it. And how you'll change as an individual and as a couple is incredible. It's so worth the growth. It's hard, but it's worth it.
And the love is sweeter than it ever is with that initial dopamine rush.
Yep.
That is one thing about the autisms. Like, I feel like everything every kid does is amazing. Every accomplishment, every milestone is something to be celebrated. But when your special one does something, oh, and like you said, crying at Broadway, you know, I mean, just like everything is magnified a bazillion times. And it's just, it's so worth all those hard moments because they all flash through your mind.
Yep. Well, listen, thank you so much, Mark and Tony.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. This is such, I know, we get to
tier 15. Tier 15.
That's right.
I'm with Tony. I'm with Tony.
That's right.
I'm loving it. Yes, baby. Yes.
All right. You know what you got to do.
All right. Tony. Okay. So you know what? I end every episode. I love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it. This was
Take
fun.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.